Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio program. I am Susan Laris and Dan, and I'm delighted to welcome you here today. Getting a little bit of sun in the Pacific Northwest, and even signs of spring that I noticed on my walk. So welcome everyone on this day or evening or whenever this show finds you in podcast or in live form. Today, we are welcoming back to the show Dr. Robert Foreman, our recurring guest who we always have such good conversations, Robert and I. Robert is the founder and director of the Forge Institute for Spirituality and Social Change, and he recently launched the new Soul Jazz program with the intent of bringing soul to life and relationships. Now, quite the multi-talented individual, Robert is also one of the world's leading experts in the study of mysticism. He is a spiritual counselor. He is the author of his memoir, Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, A Journey of Discovery, Snow, and Jazz in the Soul, which Jack Canfield described as, quote, definitely chicken soup for the spiritual seeker soul. And that memoir reflects a 39-plus year journey of into exploring spiritual enlightenment, quite an interesting history that Robert has. And he's also been a professor of comparative religions for 20 years with a PhD from Columbia University and professorships at City University of New York and Vassar College. And he's written over 10 books, and he's the co-founder of the Journal on Consciousness Studies. So many things that Robert's been involved in. I know that we have new listeners coming in all the time, so I'm always happy to give an introduction. And today we're going to be talking about taking risks in intimacy, which is something the Soul Jazz program does explore. And this is such an important question and not always an easy area to understand. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Robert about this. Just a couple of logistical notes. We should have a chat room up from what I can see if you're listening live. So I welcome you in the chat room. You do need a Blog Talk Radio login to be in there. The other day we had a whole bunch of guests in there. It's not too hard to get a login, and it's really relatively simple, and then you can talk with the people in the chat, and I do go in there on occasion. And if you are listening on the podcast, I welcome comments to the show. I want to encourage that. Much like a blog, please feel free to comment on the podcast because I very much welcome that, even if you have questions or you want to explore things further. Now, Robert Foreman's two websites are up on the show page. If you can't see the show page, I just want to remind you that they are souljazzonline.com, and that's the new Soul Jazz program, and also enlightenmentaint.com, corresponding to all of his work and his beautiful memoir. So now I am just so happy. It seems like I can never intro him in less than 5 minutes because there's just so much to say. I am so happy to bring Robert Foreman back on the line. Hello, Robert. Welcome. Are you there? Uh-oh, we lost him. Okay, well, maybe we'll extend the introduction. he'll be calling back in here in just a minute because it looks like we dropped the call today. Okay, there we go. Let's see if I can get him back.
Can you hear me?
Hello, Robert. Yes, yes, we hear you. Welcome. We just lost
Fantastic.
You for a second there.
Yes, we lost each other. And I was about to say, what a delight it is to be back. This is, what, 14, I think, that I've been here before?
You know, I was
going to
count.
So this is just a joy to be with you.
I was going to count before you came on, and I didn't get a chance. So I think you're getting close. I mean, it must be because, you know, you were one of the earlier guests. I can't quite remember exactly when you came along because this show's been going on now. We're in the fourth year. Amazing as that seems, because I hit my third year last fall. I mean, the end of the third year. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I came on first 2 years ago. So this is great. I'm so glad to be back and be glad to be talking to you. We always do have wonderful conversations, as you said.
Yeah, I always look forward to when you come on the show because it's just so free flowing. We just take it where it goes, and I enjoy that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, me too.
And I think what it ends up doing, and this show is becoming this way more and more anyway, is even a new guest to the show who was on last week, their publicist described it like we had just sat down at Starbucks and everybody was listening in. and it is that way. I mean, that is the nature of this show. And certainly when you're on, or whatever variety of coffee, tea, or beverage, we might be talking over and people are listening.
Well, let's start from there, because this is a perfect segue into what we want to talk about today. You know, you go to Starbucks and you meet somebody, and you often have a conversation where, you know, you're talking about your business or you're talking about your work or whatnot. But every now and again, you go to Starbucks, and you don't expect it, but you go to Starbucks and you meet somebody, or you sit down, you know, after a dinner or something, and you start chatting, and the conversation kind of drops down into areas in which you're learning something in the moment. You're learning something new, that things are surprising, and that you're saying things that you've never said before in ways you haven't said it before, and you're Often you're kind of surprised, aren't you, about like, oh, I didn't know I felt that, or I didn't know, you know, that this was the way things are. And that kind of experience, I think, is just a remarkable opportunity for us to grow and to learn and to find new ways to be in the world. I think the word that we like to use for that is intimacy. Not the sexual kind, obviously, but intimacy. And what I mean by intimacy is that you are discovering who you are and who the other is in the moment. So those Starbucks conversations can be real opportunities for growth and real opportunities to sort of become freer and freer in your life. And that kind of interchange is what we talk about in the Soul Jazz program. That is the kind of thing that we help people discover and help people do. And I want to say, but let's not talk about it right away, but I want to say that moment is a new kind or a new level of spiritual growth and a new kind of discovery of what it is to be a human being. But we'll get to that by the end of the show, but let's not talk about that right away.
Yes, and you know, I think part of it, when that happens, when it really happens the way you describe, it can really take us by surprise sometimes. I mean, you might leave that conversation later and say, wow, we just clicked. I mean, that seems to be the word that often is used. And not necessarily romantically, like you said, although it can appear in relationships as well. But and what's also fascinating is it seems like you don't have to be on the same wavelength exactly. I mean, I have had this happen with someone with a totally different mindset from mine, and yet somehow we found this common ground, and we just started going really deep, and all of a sudden we were both talking about different ways we were questioning our paths, even though our paths were totally different. I mean, it was like with an evangelical I was talking, having coffee, as a matter of fact. And when that happens, Bob, it's just so amazing. And, you know, and then you wonder, okay, where do you take it? And so I think that's one of the questions that you and the group of people working with you are attempting to answer, because a lot of times it'll just fall flat. Like I've had so many times where, you know, you don't get it, you don't really follow up, you don't know what to do with it. And it seems like we miss opportunities when that happens, and maybe because we're afraid.
Well, you know, there's two choices here. Sometimes, you know, when you really have that kind of openness with another individual, you might very well say to yourself, that was wonderful, and I don't want to pursue it. And that's completely fine. And that is, you know, that is perfectly, you're right. And it's also, there's no law that says that, you know, once intimacy, always intimacy, once connection, always connection. It's not the way this stuff works. But there are people and there are times where you say, well, let's see if we can do that again, or let's just make contact again. And I have lots of people that, I mean, since I talk and think about this all the time, I have quite a number of people that I sort of, you know, have developed this kind of relationship. And so that you do it, and you make contact with them, and then you talk to them again, and maybe the next time you don't make quite the same depth of contact, and then you go back and you make it a little deeper the next time. So it's not like there's a straight line here. It's not like there's something fixed that says you have to keep doing this, you have to do it in this way. That would be awful. So it's much more organic than that. But I think that sometimes there are people that you want to keep talking with, and you keep talking, and you discover that there's more and more and more areas that you can be open and discover with, and you can sort of talk with. And I find those people are just probably the most precious people in my life that I can do that with. It means that the life is so rich and so, you know, so much ongoing discovery and so free, that I consider that just one of the privileges of being a human being, is to be able to do that with folks.
Yeah. It is, it seems, it opens up a whole new dimension in life when you're willing to be open. And I think that sometimes people have been burned. I mean, I think that's the risk part of this is, you know, there may be times where you've been open in the past with someone and maybe that wasn't a good choice, or, you know, that there's the vulnerability part. And yet it seems like this can be very organic and natural, and yet sometimes it also takes courage and it takes trust and it takes discernment to know when you're in a place where that kind of interaction is safe, putting safe in quotes, you know, how do we determine what is safe for us?
All right, I will answer that, but it's going to take me a couple of minutes to get there.
Well,
okay?
Take your time. We've got plenty of time. Yes, I think it's an important question, really. It's the whole
basis.
Yeah,
it's absolutely important,
how do we know
and
we're
I will safe? And I will answer that, because I think there is a kind of an answer that my partner, Carrie Gordon, and I have been figuring out and kind of getting clearer and clearer on. But let's back up a notch. The critical word that you used is safe.
Yes.
Because if I'm going to share something of myself, intimacy requires that we're sharing something of ourselves that is, in some sense, new and undiscovered. We are discovering who we are, what we feel, what our lives are like, what our issues really are. We're discovering that in the moment. We're discovering that afresh as we do this kind of work together with another human being. And so it's every time you share in this depth, with this depth, you are doing something that is slightly risky.
Right.
If I share something with you and I don't quite know what I'm about to say, or I don't quite know what I'm feeling here, I'm about to open myself up in a way that you could very well get kind of, you know, you could ridicule me. You could be quite critical. Oh, no, you don't really feel that, is the kind of response I used to get when I was a kid. You know, that we can open ourselves up with this stuff, and then people can basically put us down or insult us or whatnot. And that really does hurt. So to share something that's fresh and alive and real is inevitably a risk.
Yes.
And it's one of the things that we use in the Soul Jazz program is that there's lots of wonderful conversations, but the critical marks of an intimate conversation, or what we call a soulful conversation, are first that you feel some feeling of risk or some anxiety as you're entering into it. Now, that anxiety may be positive and negative. That is to say, it might be like, uh-oh, do I dare say this? That's a kind of a scared one. Or it might be anxiety that comes out as a kind of high energy, a kind of giddiness, a kind of like, whoa, this is really rich here. You know, so there's a kind of a liveliness to it. Or another word for that anxiety is that it's uncertain exactly where we're going. So that always one of the marks of going to someplace new is that feeling like, I don't quite know where this is going to go.
Uh-huh.
And it can be very exciting. It can be a little scary. But in any case, there's that feeling. The other feeling, and I'm sure you'll recognize this, that always accompanies soulful conversation, is there's a feeling of flow when you're in that conversation. There was a book out called Flow by a guy named Csikszentmihalyi, I think you pronounce his name, and he talked about this sense that a runner gets when they're really cooking, you know, the runner's high, and it's a sense of you could just go and go and go and go. And that's the way these conversations feel, that they're preceded by anxiety, but once you've sort of gone through the anxiety, there's a sense of, oh, my God, we could just go anywhere. There's a sense of real freedom in that conversation. And so that the feeling that you're slightly at risk that you described a couple minutes ago, or the feeling that you really hope you need to be safe, I think is very much part and parcel of this kind of soulful interchange. Now, the question that you asked was, how do we know about, you know, where it's safe and where it's not? And we could go there. I'm happy to answer that question, but I'd like to just stop here and ask you, does this make sense, what I've said so far?
Yeah, actually, you've disarmed safety in a way. I mean, I think the answer to the question is, don't look so hard for safe. You know, that's why I put safe in quotes, because safe is elusive, and safe is not exactly what this is. I mean, there is, like you say, intrinsic risk. And I guess if I'm thinking about it in terms of how you might answer the rest of my question, it's kind of a spectrum in a way, that there may be situations and that you really aren't, this really isn't a good setting, you know, and there are signals or whatever that you have to listen to. So you may never be 100% safe, and part of this may involve risk, but it seems like it involves sensitivity too, obviously on both people's part. And so I guess I'm just trying to get at, the goal of safety is not it in this, it seems. You have to accept
that there is risk. No, you are. You're doing
risk,
something
like you're saying.
Yes, you're doing something inherently risky.
Yes.
And
that's
you're,
part
but
of
you're
the
putting
joy.
Yourself out if, yes, you're putting yourself out in a way that is not entirely under your control. You're putting yourself out in a way that you're exposing what you are, you're sharing what you are, and it can go the wrong way. And we have to be honest with ourselves that that's part of the deal here. If I'm really going to open up and be telling a truth that I haven't yet sort of, you know, made customary, you know, brought under my control, you're sort of exploring something new.
Right.
That's an inherently risky act. And so, but you do want to have a level of safety. I would not want to share this with a guy. I wouldn't really want to share much about, you know, what I was really feeling or who I really was if a guy was standing over me with a hammer or a knife. You know, it's like that's not safe. You know, that is not something that you want to do. But let me talk a little about this sense of what it takes, or how we can determine this. We've all had the experience of sharing something, and then somebody turns around and they tell our best friend, or they tell somebody that doesn't like us what we said, and all of a sudden what we thought we were sharing in privacy has entered into this sort of, you know, public or gossipy domain, and that's not fun. That is not the kind of thing we want to do. So the way I handle it is that I And here's one of the secrets of all this, and I should charge you a lot of money for this because this is actually a very cool little tool. I put out, when I'm determining, like let's say I'm at that Starbucks conversation, and
yeah.
I'm with somebody that's new, and so I'll put out something a little out of the expected. I'll put out something that puts me a little bit at risk or makes me feel a little bit vulnerable. Not a lot. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to share something terribly intimate, but I'll share something that I'm kind of working on. I don't quite know what to think about it. I don't quite know, you know. So you put out something that's a little risky,
yeah.
And you see if they respond at a similar level. You see if they can go there themselves. Are they willing to put something of themselves forward? And if they do, then I take another step. I go, you know, one notch deeper, as it were. And I see if they sort of contract me and go there. And so that I do this in a kind of a step-by-step way. I'm fairly conscious about, you know, it's like, well, how does this person respond if I start sharing blah, 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 you know? And if they respond in like kind, you know, they respond at a similar level. And that's the only way I could describe this, is at a similar level of vulnerability. You know, imagine that you're, you know, that each of us is sort of, have a gauge within ourselves, you know. 10 is the most superficial and 1 is the deepest, most intimate. You know,
yeah.
So if I'm meeting somebody for the first time and we're sort of exchanging at the level of 10, I might put out something that's, say, an 8 and see if they kind of go there. And if they do, then I might go to a 7 or a 6 and see if they match me there. And so that it's like I'm not going to put out something that puts me deeply at risk, like a 2. I'm not going to put out something if I haven't sort of felt my way into who they are and are they willing to share something with me. And this does not happen fast. You know, it's like in the very first conversation with somebody, I'll put out something that makes you feel a little bit vulnerable, you know, and see if they become a little vulnerable. Maybe the next conversation I'll put out something that makes me feel even more vulnerable. I'll see if they go there with me. So that there's a kind of I've developed, or I think we can all develop, something like an antenna of depth to have, you know, to get a sense, is this somebody that knows what depth is? Can they make themselves vulnerable? Can they take a risk with me? Do I want to take a risk with them? And so that, you know, you can kind of do this in a step-by-step way, and if you develop an antenna like this, you can start to listen in for what another person is really able to or ready to share with you. And I'll share back with them about that level. And if I put too much out, if I give them too much, yeah, that's where you get burned, you know, that people are not ready for that. They feel just a little like, whoa, I don't know if I want this kind of person, you know, I don't know if I want to have this person sharing that much with me. You know, and I know people that have said, you know, I'm an oversharer. And it seems to me that if somebody isn't...
Although I don't say it anymore. Yes.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of you, but I didn't want to say it. So.
Well, I've said it on this show. I haven't overshared
yes, you have.
Lately.
we all know people. We all know people like you're describing it used to be. And it's like, you know, to overshare means you're not tuned into the moment. But to be really open and to be really honest about what's going on and to be really open to the moment. It doesn't mean you're always sharing stuff that's vulnerable. It means you're sensitive to what's going on in this moment. You're
right.
Paying attention to what's happening here. And you're open to the moment, not open to your own vulnerabilities, but you're open to the moment. And
you know,
I'll share one
question.
More thing. And then,
okay,
and
go ahead.
Let me
go ahead,
say one more thing,
question.
And then I'll shut up.
No, you go right ahead.
Thing,
we have plenty of time.
The
so.
Thing that we use, the saying we use in the Soul Jazz program is, and it's a sort of a quickie here, so don't miss it. Don't blank here. Intimacy means that you will become somewhat vulnerability. But
yeah.
Vulnerability does not necessarily imply intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to be intimate, it means I take a risk. But not every risk is a risk leading to intimacy. Okay, that was what I wanted to say. Okay, I'm sorry, I cut you off. So.
Well, it's all right. No, it's okay. We're
yes.
just blowing with this.
yes.
I had a question as you were talking. It just came to mind. And yes, in the past, I don't know. Maybe it's not fair to characterize myself as an overshare. Just in some situations, I've found myself in that. But you know what, Bob? I have discovered that even that, depending on the situation, in fact, this is related to my question. I have found that every once in a while I will encounter someone, and this I can remember this happening in high school, where it is a real friendship, but this person is simply more of a listener. In fact, I'll use an example from high school. I had a really good friend in high school who was really quite quiet, and it's not as if we didn't share things together. I mean, we considered each other really good friends, you know, best friends in high school, and yet, you know, I tended to be more of a talker, and she genuinely seemed to like to listen. And, you know, I've thought about this in different ways, and I thought, you know, did I take advantage of this person? Did I talk too much, you know, this whole oversharing thing? And then I got to thinking about it, and I thought, you know, maybe that's just the way this person is that it just seems like there's some people who like to listen, and they're good at it, too. And they're very good at giving advice. Now, some of these people, and my friend, you know, she never became a counselor or anything like that, although I think some of these people probably are natural-born counselors. So that's my question. What if you're with someone who is a bit quieter and yet seems genuinely interested and is more of a listener than a talker? And how do you,
you know,
how do you deal with that?
How do you deal with that, right? I think that sounds like a wonderful relationship that you had with
uh-huh.
your friend.
Yeah.
I think it sounds like there was a lot of kind of mutual support, and she liked to listen to you, and you liked to talk and whatnot. And I certainly have friends that are like that. And I want to say, you know, bully for the conversation and bully for the relationship. But intimacy, I would not call that an intimate relationship.
And see, that's the question, is was that true intimacy, or what was that? Because it feels that way. I mean, it feels like you're close, and yet it is a little different, isn't it, than what you're talking about, where the two people are more evenly sharing. And so yeah, I mean, it just, That is the question when you say it's not exactly.
I don't think there's a straight line here. I don't think there's a simple answer. I
yeah,
can say
degrees.
That from her side, that is to say, with reference to her and her alone, I would say that's not real intimacy, because she was delighted to listen to you, but she was not necessarily taking a risk on her own. And
uh-huh.
intimacy in part requires that you're taking a risk to share something that you've never. That, you know, what's going
right.
on for you in the moment. And for her to listen to you, I think, is very sweet, very generous, and probably very helpful to both of you. But I wouldn't call that true intimacy.
Yeah. Let me say, too, these people tend to listen in general. I mean, they tend to be the sort of people that, you know, people come and cry on their shoulder or whatever. They tend to be mm-hmm. listeners and not necessarily sharers. And when you're in the situation of talking to one of these people like my friend, I mean, from my perspective, because, you know, it felt quite intimate because, you know, you're talking about different things. But on a relationship level, from what you're saying, it's not exactly what you're talking about. That what you're talking about is where both people are taking risks and there's a genuine there's an interchange at that level. So I just think it's important to make a distinction, because I think this comes up a lot, and it can feel really good. I mean, it can really be a very satisfying form of friendship as long as you're not taking advantage of a person. I mean, you have to be
mindful.
Of course,
it can, of course. Yeah, of course
right.
it can be a very satisfying relationship. And you know, please, I hope nobody thinks that I'm saying that any other kind of relationship is not good.
Oh,
it's
no.
Not useful,
no, there are no
fun.
Comparisons.
Not
I mean, there's
all
kinds of them. I mean, I think
right.
I understand. I'm just trying to really get at the kind of thing you're talking about. And, you know, sadly, I can't think, you know, they don't necessarily, this is something where I think we need development, because it's hard to think of how many, I mean, it sounds like you've had a lot of friendships like this, but not all of us have. I mean, I think they can be rather rare if you're not accustomed to, at least in the long term. I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting what the listeners might think about this, if this sort of thing happens to them often or not as often. If it's not happening that often to you, what does that mean, I wonder? You know, is
that
it
means you should, that means you should take the Soul Jazz program.
Boy, that just led right in. You know, you think me, just, I just threw you a softball there, Bob.
Yes, you did. That was a very sweet
totally
little softball.
Totally unintentionally, too.
Yeah, yeah, well, let me talk to this a little bit. There's a couple things that have come up here. First of all, you know, I've been in relationships where I've done most of the listening.
Uh-huh.
And I've also been in relationships where I've done most of the talking. And
yeah.
I think that even though I'm talking, when I'm the talker in the relationship, even though I'm talking a fair amount, it doesn't mean I'm necessarily going to someplace new. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean I'm discovering something in process. You know, for many, many years I was in psychotherapy, and I used to talk sometimes to people about what I was discovering in psychotherapy, and it wasn't exactly discovering in the moment. It was more like, you know, hey, I've learned that my mother did blah, blah, blah when I was a kid, and it sounded very emotionally rich, and it was, but it wasn't new. It was simply
yeah.
a kind of going over what I'd been going over in my head now for, you know, for the prior year or whatnot. And so just because we talk a lot, it does not mean we're necessarily discovering. I was not taking a risk when I was doing all that talking. To do a risky thing means that you're discovering something, excuse me, to become intimate requires that you're discovering something new. It means that you're sort of figuring out who you are in process, and that's a different thing. So that's the first bit I wanted to talk about. Now the second thing I wanted to talk about is this sense that some people haven't had many of these relationships, and I can say without a question of a doubt that I was probably 50 before I had any relationship that I think was really, truly connected, truly intimate. And I think it required a fair amount of maturity on my part that I was now strong enough to be able to enter into a relationship with somebody in which I wasn't trying to prove anything, and in which I was really able to listen and discover and sort of speak new things. And, you know, there was one guy that I started to have such a relationship with, and by the way, that's now probably 15, 20 years ago, and he and I are still
mm-hmm.
best of friends. And then there's, you know, then I met a couple of other people, you know, another man, another woman, a woman or two, and little by little I've built a little community of people that I can kind of discover and learn in process with. And
yes.
so I feel extremely lucky. I probably have half a dozen people in my life that I can do this kind of work with. And I make it a point to talk to them on a moderately regular, each of them on a moderately regular basis, because
uh-huh.
it's so rich and it's so, it helps me be more open and more alive in my own life that I can be discovering with other people. So
yes.
it really is a kind of, it's its own kind of path to be able to do this, and it's its own kind of level of freedom that comes with this stuff. And again, I'll just get the plug in that I think the Soul Jazz program helps us to do this. It really has developed some tools for people to be able to do this better. So that's enough of that plug. So I think that it's so rich to be able to do this. So I feel very lucky. And I think it is the case, alas, that many, many people, and I couldn't say many or most, but I could certainly say many, many people really don't have this, certainly don't have it enough in their life. And many people don't have really any relationships. Before I was 50, I didn't have any relationships I would describe as truly, truly open and truly connected. So I think this is a huge opportunity for people.
So with that said, and I guess I barely qualified. I mean, just kidding, because I'm right at that age, but if you had had the tools, Bob, here's a question for you. If you had had them earlier in your life, If you had known how to do this a little bit more effectively, and I'm really throwing you a softball, not even intentionally, but I'm really trying to explore. I mean, there's a real motivation behind why this program exists, and a whole group of you worked on this, I know. And so I'm trying to see, can we, earlier in life, because there are people listening of all ages, find a way to do this? I mean, could I, even when I was really young, maybe, because, you know, young people can be really incredibly insightful, my goodness, and so that's the question is, are there, if you had had more tools at your disposal when you were younger, and maybe those are available to people now, do you think that maybe you could have figured it out at a younger age, or is it just something that takes time and life experience?
That is not a softball at all. That's a very interesting question. And so let me kind of think out loud here. I don't think it's an age thing. I have met people who are 65 and incredibly blocked off and really unable to share with another, you know, what they're kind of struggling with and what they don't know yet and where they are. And I've been with 20-year-olds that also can't share openly with another person because in some sense they are too kind of blocked off in themselves. And but I can also say I've been with 20-year-olds that are extremely ready for this kind of work and extremely open to sort of discovering in the moment, and 60-year-olds who are extremely open to discovering in their lives. And one of my spiritual direction clients, I'm not sure exactly what her age is, but it's something about 80. It's roughly 80. And, you know, this woman is extremely open to, you know, kind of discerning what's going on for her and what are her attitudes towards the aging process and, you know, what does she really feel towards her friends. And it's amazing to talk to somebody like that. It's a real privilege to be with somebody like that. So it is, I don't think this is age dependent. Rather, I think that there's something about, it's hard to put it into words, something about people's readiness to not know, which requires an enormous amount of ego strength.
Yes.
It requires the confidence in who you are, that you're willing and able to say, gee whiz, I'm not sure I know what I'm feeling here, or gee whiz, I'm not sure I know what I think. Let me kind of think this out loud with you. And that, you know, that requires an enormous amount of self-possession. And the ability to say, I'm not sure, requires great ego strength.
Yeah.
So I think it's in there, Susan. I don't think it's an age. I don't think it's an age matter, though age helps. I know that for me, I was extremely busy in my 30s trying to build up confidence and build up a sense of who I was and become stronger in who I was. That took a lot of work.
Well, we can be preoccupied, you know, with other things at that age. I mean, it's similar. I think it may be similar to why there can be very young, wonderful spiritual authors. There are some that are younger. And yet it seems like everybody, a lot of people say, you know, once you hit your 50s, that's when the work comes out, you know, and I don't know why that is. Or maybe, you know, you're late 40s, and it's not a rule. It's not like everybody this happens to. It seems to just be somewhat common. But, you know, there's something else I wanted to say, and you can respond to that too, but just something that came to me, and I don't want to lose it, is yesterday I actually had a rather spontaneous show. I've had two shows in a row here, which can be powerful sometimes if I'm up to it on a given week. It can really work. And I just so happened to have a young person on, I think he's in his 20s, and he talked about this beautiful mentoring relationship, which is a little bit different, although this is what I'm getting at. What you talked about with the 80-year-old, too, is, although that's a kind of a counseling thing, but I think there might be some potential here in across-the-age connections if people are open. I mean, there's some beautiful stories of that kind of thing And this person who was on the show yesterday was talking about this rare situation where he connected with this older gentleman, and they just really connected. And I think it really could go two ways if the people, you know, the young person was mature enough to handle that. And it could be quite a beautiful thing. So it's just something, when you think about the ages, I see some potential there. In fact, just there's just something there that if people were ready for it, it could be really kind of a cool thing. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Sure, and I don't think that age needs to stand in the way at all.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
In general, I mean, what you said before about, you know, this tends to kick in around 50. Carl Jung, the psychologist, thought that, you know, the first 40 years you're building up your ego, and then after 40 you start letting things go, and that's where spirituality
yeah.
kicks in. And I think there might be something to that. Most people go through that kind
of
trajectory.
That's my experience.
I can say that in general, you know, in general, the person that's 20 or 30, you know, they're very busy building up stuff. They're busy building
yeah.
a career for themselves.
Or you're having kids.
They build
you
a
know.
Family. You have
yeah.
kids. You're responsible for the kids. You have to,
yeah.
you know, you're quite concerned about earning a living and developing your, you know, developing your skills. And, you know, you might
right.
go to graduate school or, you know, so that typically is what people are doing. And, you know, it's like the typical 20-year-old or the typical 25-year-old is not really interested in sort of discovering what they don't know yet, because they're still building what they do know. But I think at some point where you've kind of developed your career and you've sort of raised your kids or fairly much raised your kids, and, you know, you're going along, the question of, you know, well, really, who am I, and really, what's the purpose of life and whatnot, those questions do become more dominant when you get a little older. And I think those questions are what should lead you into this thought that I don't yet know. I don't really know what my life
yeah.
is about and what the purpose of what I'm doing is, and does this really fulfill me or satisfy me? So those questions come up with a little more sort of power once
right.
you've kind of built a life for yourself. And I think that
right.
you know, so that in general, I think people, you know, people tend to be a little older that are interested in developing this stuff. But intimacy and discovering who you are with a friend is kind of different. In other words,
yeah.
it's always a privilege, even if you're talking about, you know, the question of what is it to build a career, to have somebody in the same boat as you, makes you feel more, less alone and more, sort of more profoundly human in the process. So I
yeah.
think the more of that we can do, the better off people are. But
yeah.
I think you're right, that I think there is a kind of a, there's a kind of age appropriateness to some of this work.
Well, it's open. I mean, I think it's no different than, I mean, there are no limitations. Don't want to set limitations. But,
right.
You know, I don't want to focus on this too long, the age thing. It just came up just, I think part of the motivation was, too, is, you know, if it could benefit us younger in life, if we, but you have to have the interest, is what you say, because it's true. You get very
frankly,
distracted.
I think the harder
mm-hmm.
thing is not so much the interest. You have to have the ability.
Yeah.
And the ability means I am able to reach beyond what I already know into what I'm discovering in the moment. And I don't think I would have been able to do that at 20. I was too busy proving myself. I was too busy sort of, you know, like arguing my case, whatever it was. You know, you're very busy when you're 20 and 30. You're
yeah,
very preoccupied with sort of establishing yourself. You know, so I think the critical matter is, are you really ready to think out loud and to recognize how little you know as a human being? That's,
yeah.
I think, and I wasn't very ready when I was 20, but maybe by the time I was 40 or 50, which is the time that I started to develop these relationships, maybe by that time I was really more ready to say, you know, I'm not sure I know the answers here. And that's,
mm-hmm.
I think, the critical juncture where you really could start to make contact with another human being. It's fun. It's really profound.
Well, that way. I guess, again, it depends on the person. I think, you know, it's funny. Sometimes I think teens, even though they're very immature, ask some of these questions, and then they get totally consumed. I mean, they're not ready for it. But some of the same searching and vulnerability You know, when I think to my own past, I was asking a lot of questions before my 20s, and then I got totally involved in life, and it was years. But what was so interesting is some of those seeds were planted when I was younger. So, you know, there's this awareness we can have that we just bring into the world, I think, sometimes.
Yeah,
and
you
develop through our life.
Yeah, you certainly meet people that kind of bring this in and seem to be kind of dwelling on this stuff from a very early age. And,
yes.
And in many ways, I think those people are extremely lucky. They're really dealing with rich stuff right from the start. But, you know, it also often turns out that people like that are struggling with depression and struggling with, oh,
yeah,
my God, you know, what are my parents doing? And, you know, so that it's a mixed blessing for the teenagers. You know, it's you know, the James Dean type of teenager that, you know, like is going through their angsting period. You know, you feel for that kid. You know, you feel for him. And you know, it's, I'm not sure he's ready to really be risking stuff because he hasn't built
stuff
yet. No,
I don't think, not ready,
but
he's
certainly addressing where things are not working for him and where things are hard. So,
yeah.
I'm
so
sorry.
Bringing this back to the, to just, since we've got, as usual, it goes by so fast, we just kind of just go with it and it goes because we've got about 13 minutes, well, I guess of meaningful time, about 10 minutes left. So, I guess I wanted to give you the opportunity to kind of bring the ship in a way in terms of, you know, what do you want to leave us with here in terms of the skills or, you know, what is it that we can develop through, you know, some people may doubt that you can really learn these kinds of things, that this is just, you know, something you do. And so maybe you can talk a little bit about, without getting into any details, just how your early trials or betas with Soul Jazz have gone, and how meaningful that they've been for people, and just how it's going.
You do throw me a softball every now and again, don't you? That's wonderful.
I do. So you should be paying me, Bob. No, just kidding. And there are
right.
no payments being passed.
As
this
I was,
is not
as,
an infomercial.
As you may be aware, Susan,
yes?
We have now run two beta tests online. We've run this program now 5 or 6 times face-to-face. And recently we've been running it as a webinar. In other words, people from all over the country come together.
Yes.
And, you know, we can see each other on the phone and we can hear each other on the phone. We can see each other on the computer and hear each other on the phone. And it's a magical set of abilities we have online. And one of the things we have discovered is that it is indeed possible for people to make real and honest contact with one another despite the miles and despite, you know, the time zone differences. We've got people in California, there was one in Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
and there was, you know, so it's like people can be from all over. And that's been surprising to me, that it has been possible, even though we're dealing with this highly complex technological stuff. It doesn't feel that way as you're dealing with that. You're just talking to people. But
right.
as for the question of can you train somebody or can you teach this stuff, I think the answer, no, let me say that a little more strongly. The answer is unequivocally yes. I
yes.
think that it is very much possible to be to train people into what exactly it takes and what it feels like to be able to make contact. This word risk that we've been talking about in this telephone call, you know, the word risk comes up a lot. Are you willing to, and can you take a risk? And one of the questions that we set up rather early on is, well, if we're going to take a risk here, what's it going to take to make it feel safe, to make it feel okay?
Yeah.
And we talk about what we can agree to. We talk about confidentiality. We talk about, you know, setting it up in a way that's going to be non-judgmental. And it really does help. And people
yeah.
are finding that despite – there's one woman I'm thinking of right now who took this most recent beta test, and the first thing she said is, I've never really had an intimate relationship with anybody, and I don't
wow.
know how, and I don't know why.
And, wow.
and you know, I mean, she's been married, but that's what we're talking about is deeper than just, the fact that you live with somebody. It's really being willing to kind of open yourself out in ways that are new and surprising and really very true. And by the end of 6 weeks, it's two hours a night. It's 2 hours a week on a Sunday night we've been meeting. And so by the end of her 6 week class, so she's now been with us for 12 hours, really. She said at the end, and this was just a couple of days ago, she said, I have been really astonished that I can make contact in a way that I didn't know was possible. And that I just find that so amazing, you know, that people can go through these steps. And we have kind of the exercises we use in the program are, they're sort of developmental. Each one goes a little deeper than the previous one. She and everybody felt like, you know, despite the miles and despite the technology, you really can make contact if you know how. And so, yes, I think it is possible to teach people how to do this. And I think it doesn't come automatically to everybody. And I think it's the kind of thing that people can really use if people are, you know, if you're a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, have a family, you communicate. And what we're inviting people to do is to communicate more deeply and to communicate with more consciousness and to do it in a way that's more open. And I can't think of anything that's more useful and more beneficial to people. So, you know, thank you for the softball. And the answer is, of course you can train people.
Well, it sounds like you're developing lasting friendships, because that may be the other question. Although anyone who's gone on any kind of spiritual retreat, which is a different kind of experience, I mean, someone may ask the question that, can I really connect to people I don't know? Because, you know, you're just connecting with a whole bunch of people that are signed up, you know, at the same time. And what I suspect is deep friendships are now developing that you know, maybe not in all cases. I'm sure in some cases people come and go. They have the experience. We've all had that happen, although I guess it's a little different if you're in a retreat or something. But, you know, I think that is a question someone might ask, is can I be open in a setting where I don't really know the people at the outset, and yet that's part of the skill set that they're learning, because that's always going to happen when you meet someone that you're going to become intimate with.
Yeah, and I think one of the failures of many spiritual retreats and many spiritual programs is that you go and you have this retreat, you love everybody there, you love some of the people that are there, and then it ends and you never have any more
contact.
That's
it. That is exactly right.
For that reason, we have developed an ongoing support system that, you know, involves people making contact and continuing some of the relationships. And I can't tell you if people have become best of friends after the program, but I can tell you without a question of a doubt that people have continued relationships and continue to explore. You know, how they feel about those relationships, frankly, it's none of my business, but I can tell you that relationships have continued and are continuing, even though there's not been that many people that have taken the program so far. Without a question of a doubt, that some of the relationships have continued. And I think to the benefit of everyone involved, I think these things are just really rich, because you've now got, you know, you've got this new ability to be really open and use the relationships in ways that are, you know, really productive for you both. How cool is that?
Yes. Well, you know, what I'm thinking too is that for some of us, depending on, like if I had pursued this when I was in Kansas, I probably wouldn't have been in a situation to do that easily. But sometimes you can feel like you're in a rather isolating situation in your life, and you just want to reach out. And you don't really know who to reach out to right in your immediate area. You can certainly
and I would say a lot of people
like
don't
that.
Know how.
Yes.
Yeah. But keep going, Susan. I'm sorry, I
could see the power of it in those situations. In fact, I think Kansas is a perfect example. You know, I have known people who are just kind of in the middle, and you're around the same. That is a different kind of environment. There are people who awaken in Kansas who are looking for things, because I was in Kansas. And, you know, what did I do? I mean, this happened to me. I had to look, you know, for people online and in other ways. You know, there wasn't anything like this program. But, you know, you when you're reaching out and you can be anywhere. And that's one of the things about this sort of thing is I could see how it could lead to enduring friendships. You know, now I almost want to use almost a dating site analogy, although it's not. You know how they have success story, like, we were friends for 20 years after or something. But I think you probably will have things like that happen where people are thanking you, that, oh, my gosh, I never would have discovered, you know, random name, Amy or whatever, you know, if not for them. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there's a beauty to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's
and
beauty.
I can say that's true for me. Already,
uh-huh.
And so I, in my own experience, I can say that there's been, we've had two beta tests, and out of the two beta tests, there's one woman that's kind of local that I've already begun just sort of meeting with her because I enjoy her. I just enjoy hanging out with her. And then there's a woman from the first beta test that I've enjoyed hanging out with, and we talked. Let's see, that was probably about 6 months ago. We probably talked about once a month since that time, and I can well imagine that friendship will continue. And I think that's, yeah, I have no question. But and I've heard that other people have continued like that. So yeah, there's absolutely. But that's I sometimes think we should call it dating services, but there's the dating service about intimacy and honesty.
It's a special kind, you know. It's not Christian mingle.
It's post. How can we put this? You know, post-denominational mingle.
Yes, very much so. So we are coming down to the last few minutes, and we have been, thanks again to Blog Talk Radio, we did manage to get on the main live page again, this show, and so I know we have live listeners, and also the spirituality page. We're very highly placed at the moment, and so I'm always thankful when that happens. So I want to give you, while the show is live, the opportunity to once again remind people where they can find you and also say thank you, Bob. I always appreciate having you on. We never run out of things to talk about, so thanks for being on the show again. So just let people know all the details of where to find you and what's coming up.
Okay. Before I do that, though, I want to tell you thank you, and thank you for continuing to do this work. You are bringing so much energy to it, and I'm honored to be part of your discovery process. So thank you for inviting
me. Well, thanks. Thanks, Bob.
And that is completely sincere. I just think you're just amazing doing this work. People can find about Soul Jazz, as you said in the beginning. People can find out about Soul Jazz by going to Soul Jazz Online, all one word, of course, .com. And then my book that you mentioned early on that I think people might enjoy is called Enlightenment. The website is called enlightenment8.com, and the book is called Enlightenment 8, What It's Cracked Up to Be. And so I would like to invite people. We will be having another probably beta test. We haven't quite decided whether we should call the test, but we will be having another go-round of the Soul Jazz program, probably starting in early April, so that would be probably the first or second week of April, and that would last for 6 weeks, one class a week, probably Sunday nights. I'd love to have people sign up. They can sign up at the souljazzonline.com website, and I strongly encourage people to do it because it is a part of bringing your life to fulfillment. In the same sense that a good spiritual practice is designed to bring your life to real depth and fulfillment. So I'd love to have people involved. So thank you.
Yes, I really hope that people do. Before the show goes down, and then I'll say our goodbyes here, I want to make sure people know the next show, really fast, is Friday, February 28th at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. Dr. Alan G. Hunter is going to be back on the program. The topic is Princess Frogs and Ugly Sisters. He's going to talk about the healing power of the real fairy tales. And also go to frontierbeyondfear.com for all information about this show. That's where you can learn all the details about what's going on both in the past and in the future. Just frontierbeyondfear.com. And please do join us this Friday, February 28th, Dr. Alan G. Hunter will be back on the show, 11 a.m. Pacific, a wonderful guest. So thanks for being here to the live audience. And now we will wrap up with the podcast audience here. So, Bob, I just want to thank you again. I do appreciate your being here, and I know we have quite a number of things that we've explored, and it seems like there are many more things that we can explore in the future, too. One of these days, I'd like to talk to you again about mysticism. I'm sure that'll come up again at some point. And we might even revisit your book again on one show, since we've had such growth in the show, and you and I have grown in our conversations on the show. So I think there's just a wealth of things to talk about. So thanks again for being here, Bob.
And I am thoroughly game and look forward to coming back, and it's always a joy to talk to you. So thank you.
All right. Well, you take care,
okay.
I look forward to the next time, and good luck with Soul Jazz. I think it has lots of wonderful things happening around it, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Joe.
All right. Take care. All right, just wrapping up the podcast here. Just, again, a welcome to the podcast listeners, by the way. I know that you listen to us across time, so to speak. And I always appreciate that, especially since I know for a fact that many of you could be listening to this show 3 years in the future, because I still have people coming back and listening to the early shows, and I hope we have that kind of staying power. The show is going strong. It seems to be really picking up steam. So, and I've got some really good guests coming up in the next few months that I think everyone will enjoy. So I do want to put out a reminder that if you'd like to support this show, which is a listener-supported broadcast, you can learn how to do that at frontierbeyondfear.com, because I do appreciate any support since it's a labor of love here. I put time into it because I enjoy it. But those of you who'd like to support the show, that's always most welcome. So, again, everyone, have a wonderful day, evening, whatever this show finds you, and I hope you too have benefited from this and will begin to really reflect upon how you can find more intimacy in your relationships and friendships, and really reflect upon how that would help with your journey and your growth to continue to develop in that area. So thanks again, everyone. ¶¶